You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Go Wild. Go Wild is the fastest growing social media platform for outdoor enthusiasts. If you love to hunt, fish, camp, hike, this is the community for you. Go to the Google Play Store or wherever you download your apps and download the Go Wild app and get started today. And for more information, you can visit timetogowild.com. Let's get outside. It's time to go wild.
We get asked this question all the time. How can I make my land more productive? When you look at the native landscape and you're looking at how we can make everything more productive, it oftentimes comes back to replicating nature. Pure Air Natives allows you to do that with their custom seed mixes, all the way to their buffer mixes, pollinator mixes, all things native seeds from grasses to forbs.
How could you go wrong with a company whose motto is hashtag plant your legacy? Get started planting natives with pureairnative.com.
And check it out, because each podcast listener can get a 10% discount by mentioning the Land and Legacy podcast.
All right, guys, welcome to another Land and Legacy Habitat Heroes podcast. I'm your host, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dime.
And we have special guest, Mr. I need to build this up a little better. Yeah.
That's a horrible drum roll, by the way.
That was terrible. So we have Dury Outdoors team member, critical mass winner, and do I dare say,
big
not to put
killer.
Any more pressure on you, but Mr. 200-incher, Greg Glessinger, here with us today.
Thanks,
Greg,
guys.
Thanks
really
for joining us.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the invite, man. This is fun.
Yes, absolutely. So give you guys an idea where we're at. We are here in Springfield, Missouri, the Ark of the Ozarks Quest Hunt Co. Expo. And this expo has kind of been around for a while, but Quest Hunt Co. came on the scene last year, helped take over this event, and are now revamping it to make it, trying to make it, and are going to, I have no doubt they will, but make it the Iowa Big Buck Classic of Missouri, or mm-hmm. Big Buck Classic of Arkansas. Missouri used to
Which
have
I
one.
Say we're missing right now in the state.
Yeah, we're right in the heart of Kansas and
mm-hmm.
Iowa, Illinois, and Oklahoma, and Arkansas, and we're the state with no real expo. So this is the revamped version, and we've got several DOD team members yeah. here. And who else is here from DOD?
Matt Drury. Yeah. And then Stephen and Jesse McBee, I believe, are here as well. I think Stephen's doing a seminar, I think, at 3 o'clock this afternoon.
Oh, awesome.
And I think Sean from Heartland Bow Hunters
here. Sean's here.
Yep. And then Matt and I are here.
Yeah. You know, local
we
boys.
Should, yep. We should mention what Quest Hunt Company really is.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Because I think that name probably doesn't do it justice, which it's the largest whitetail tournament
mm-hmm.
in the country.
That's
so
correct.
They only in 3 states or 4 states in 2018, and
yep.
they're adding 3 more in 2019, mm-hmm. which is Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Kentucky. And then their current states is Missouri, Arkansas, Mississippi, and
Iowa. How'd you forget Iowa?
Yeah, exactly. So it's pretty neat what they're doing. They're taking kind of like the Bassmaster Classic, mm-hmm. or whatever you want to term that, in the fishing world and spun it in the hunting world. And it's really catching a critical buzz. All the guys walking in the booth that I'm meeting with and saying hi to are really excited, doing a banquet tonight.
Yep.
Awards. And then they're kicking off with Heath Sanders, who just signed a massive label with Sony, I believe, in the country,
awesome.
In the country world.
Wow.
He's setting the world on fire. So they're not messing around. These guys are first class. Everything they're doing is top-notch stuff. It's really quite fun to see what they're doing.
It is. And like I said, they're hitting the ground running and just taking over the show, taking over the kind of the whitetail contest and doing – it with class, in my opinion, honestly. Like the show itself looks great, a lot of great vendors, and a great turnout so far.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And the benefit here today is it's Ark of the Ozarks, so all the proceeds are going to a nonprofit organization, which I forget what Ark of the Ozarks, what group they work with, but I think it's kids with disabilities and stuff like that. So really great organization that we're helping here. So
yeah, and we all know as hunters that our numbers are not growing.
No.
And, and we're all competitive people, right?
That's right.
And we all like to have win prizes. So they took that model.
They got our weakness.
Yeah, they got our weakness, and they took that model, and they're trying to build off of it. And I think it's nothing short of genius. It's going to bring new awareness and a new, maybe a new blood into this and make it more fun, maybe.
It sounds like, oh, well, they're just fueling that competition or whatever. But truthfully, the way the structure is, it's a team mentality.
Yeah.
And so you're getting hopefully other people outdoors, or you're teaming up and truthfully trying to come in and say, hey, work with me. Let's hunt together and make this thing happen. Try to win some cool prizes.
Yeah. The concept is spot on. It's really neat.
I think the sign up is 150 a team, 75 a person.
Yeah, you got it, man. Yep.
And so we had them on, you guys, listeners, we had them on back in September or August. I can't remember.
Late August, September time frame.
And they kind of explained it. But $75 a person for a two-man team, so $150 entry. And
Per state.
And basically based off score. And the winners get two Polaris Rangers.
Yeah. Yeah. There's top 10 prizes, anywhere from two Polaris's to coolers to Bose to Matthews just came on.
Wow.
I mean, it goes right down the list. You can go to their website. I think it's questhuntco.com.
Yeah.
And you can look at their list of prizes. But top 10 guys, top 10 teams walk away per state with some amazing prizes. I think it's totaling 50,000 total prize for each state.
Wow. We talked to a guy in the booth that was from Arkansas, and he killed a 135, and he won eighth out of Arkansas, and so he was walking home with some tree stands and all kinds of goodies.
Trail cameras, like, cooler, something like that. I was like, man.
Why not? Hey. You're going to go anyway.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. You're going to do it. I mean, if you feel confident that you're going to kill some deer, might as well.
Yeah. Exactly.
And then, and I think the other thing is, even when you sign up and you're part of or you're entered into it, you have awesome discounts, too, on partner products.
They do.
Just as being a team member.
Yeah. So I think they vary from anywhere from, like, 15 to 35 or 40%, depending on the product, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so you might as well.
You save that $75 just on the discounts.
And if you want to do multiple states, you just sign up in multiple states, and it's just, you know, another $150 per team for another state, and you keep rolling on.
And how many stories, though, have you heard of the one guy who's out there and just sticks a giant. He's like, I've never seen this deer before. You just never know what can happen. You never know.
Kind of wish Matt and I, we anticipated our hunting days being limited this year with just travel and work and baby and everything. So it was like, I don't know. We didn't end up signing up. We're like, let's just see what everybody. We should have, because we killed two bucks back to back. And I'm like, I bet we'd have won something.
You could have.
Could have. I'll be curious. I need to go talk to those guys and see where we would have ranked.
Yep. You know, the fun thing is it's not limiting to weapon either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you're a bow guy or gun guy, you're throwing all in the same mix. So, you know, it's
I like that about
it. It's really about anybody's tournament, and anybody can win. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they've really, called the average guy, whatever you want to tag it. But the concept is really a cool idea.
You have the ability to – let's say you kill a 140 with a bow during archery season, and then you turn around and you kill a 160 with a gun, you can re-up it. Yep, yep, swap it out.
Pull one out, put one in.
I think they call that culling in the fishing world.
There you go.
Yeah, and so you have that ability to where it's not like you got one shot at this. Now, you do if you're in one of those states where you get one buck. But for us here in Missouri, we could have totally – we should have done it, Matt. It was stupid.
You know, it's one of those things that you look back 10 years from now, we're going to say, you know what, we were at the first one. Because just the buzz and the excitement that's here. Yeah. It's got that traction that you can feel it, like this is really going to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? So.
Yeah, we did this booth, or we had a booth at this expo last year before Quest came on the scene. And, of course, weather was bad, but there was just hardly anybody here. And it was just a very local, small expo. Yeah. And just in this year, now there's all kinds of people. We did a seminar this morning, Living on the Edge, and the room was filled up, and there's a lot more people here. So, and this is first year.
Yeah.
And it's in a great location, Springfield, Missouri. So it's one of those where a guy could totally convince his wife to come with him and family, because we have the Wonders of Wildlife Museum. Mm-hmm. We have all the malls and the shopping around here to where it's just a great place to be.
Agreed.
Too many restaurants, honestly.
Too many, yeah, for sure. So anyway, now that we talked about Quest Hunt Co., Greg, well, I'll introduce, and when we talk about this – critical mass winner last year, and You killed a 239 extra innings this year and major league last year. But we go back to a much different time.
A much more humbling beginning.
Yeah. I remember you were one of the first guys. So everybody's probably heard my story. I was working for the Missouri Department of Conservation, and my old college roommate took a job with Mark Dury.
That's right.
And he was working in Iowa, and he's like, hey, man, we always need somebody to fill in when guest comes in, and would you be willing to film? I'm like, dude, all I've ever ran is smaller cameras. He goes, oh, it's not that hard.
Yeah.
And I never learned, and they just trained me, and I'm like, okay,
three
I can
in
do
the
that.
Tree.
Just like, threw you to the wolves.
Put the monkey in the tree.
That's right. And a first
That's a great analogy. That really is.
Yes.
He's tall and lanky like a monkey, man.
We both spent a lot of time in the tree with him. That's exactly what it is.
Much lankier back in those days.
Yeah, you were.
Very malnourished.
Much and, quicker, too.
You got baby slowing him down a little bit.
So I've got the dad bod going on already. And so I'm trying to think. The first morning out, I filmed Jared Lurk.
You did.
And I filmed him. He ended up killing one. Terrible footage. I was horrible. I was a young hunter and cameraman who'd never seen a good deer. And I got in the tree.
A 130 for you was a giant.
130 for me was a giant.
It was a giant. Why are we not killing him?
Yep.
It was a giant.
Yep. It was
foolish.
I tell people this.
Foolish.
Foolish.
You're an idiot.
Yeah. You're an idiot.
Wake
I never
up,
said that.
Idiot. Yeah.
But
your face said it, Adam. You didn't have to use words. Yeah. You
My
look
wife
at
tells
me
I give facial expressions that I'm not aware I give.
Yeah, I saw a few facial expressions like, you know, there'd be a four-letter word if language was to come out of it. It's coming, but the language was everything.
That's funny.
Yeah, we saw a lot of deer that fall and ended up filming Jared kill a nice one and then filmed you kill a nice one.
On the last day, last morning.
Oh, wow.
You were leaving at noon.
Yep.
And we killed him at like at 9:30 or 9 o'clock.
Yep.
And we were
down to the wire.
Down to the wire.
Yep.
He actually that night, he says, man, I really should be going first thing in the morning.
Yep.
I should be going home. I said, can you just give me one more sit? And we backtrack when you had to leave to be home by a certain time. We factored if you left by noon, you would meet whatever that was to get home by.
Yeah.
And you said, okay, I'll go one more set. And that one more set.
I had been up there, I think, almost 2 weeks or something.
It was almost
like
2 weeks.
We had been grinding.
Yeah.
And a funny
morning
story.
And night.
We there's that little Mexican place that was had this stroke of good luck.
Yes.
Mark had eaten there that one night and ended up killing 195.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, the Mexican restaurant gave me good luck. And so Jared
of
and I went a few days later, and he ended up killing one the night or the morning after eating there. And we had hunted Missouri some, and we're like, we got to go back to Iowa, eat at the Mexican restaurant, and then hunt Iowa. We did that next morning. Killed
Stupid
that
stitious.
Deer. I think that deer's name was it Moose?
Yes, it was.
I think it was Moose, yeah.
We caught him off an alfalfa field. He came from like 300 yards away.
That's right.
Dang near to the base of the tree. I mean, we shot literally at 5 yards, if not less.
Yep.
It's basically shooting straight down.
And I remember that stand had been in that tree a while, and it was like unlevel. And I remember standing there as he was working away. And, of course, at that point I was so like, you can't move in the tree because you're going to spook them even though they're that far away. And I was just like, oh, my gosh, please get here, deer. Ended up shooting the deer. And I remember we celebrated, and it was like one of the first things, that's the Mexican food.
It was. That was
you
the standing joke.
I think that was the fall of 2011 or 2010, something like that. So
you got to be close. That or 09.
I think it was 10 because I graduated college.
Oh, was it?
And in the spring of 10, and that fall is when I filmed you.
Well, there you go.
Yep. The fall of 10. So going 9 years.
9 years ago.
And then, of course, a lot of things had changed from then, but we had stayed in contact, and here we are in Springfield, Missouri.
Yep. You know, and that's something to be said, that we didn't know each other. Way back then we met, and then next morning we're 20 feet in the tree.
Yeah.
And some of my best relationships today have been caused by being 20 feet in the tree.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think that's why hunting is so – it just connects
because
people.
Everything has to shut down. All technology goes away,
yeah,
and you become who you are.
Yeah.
You know, share stories. You get to, you know, spend way too much time together.
Yep.
good and bad.
We were in those blinds fighting flies and
trying
to film.
It's always something.
Yeah, and it was just like, and I remember it was like, we can't open the windows. I still remember this. We can't open the windows because we're going to let all the flies in. It's going to be bad. So I had to try to film through the windows, and they were plexiglass. Mm. And Jared texts me like a couple weeks later and goes, oh, all that footage you shot through the glass, unusable. I'm like, oh, great. Thanks. Yeah.
Wow. So it's funny how that all works. You know, you don't know a guy. And now here we are almost a decade later. Almost.
Yeah.
God, a decade later. And now we're friendship is much deeper.
Yep.
And our relationship has changed.
Yep.
And it's much deeper in a professional level with what you guys have now traveled the country and become what you guys with Land and Legacy has created is something that's really quite remarkable.
I appreciate that.
And now here we are, you know, you're teaching me something, and 9 years ago, a 130, 135 was a mega giant, and I'm calling you off on him, and you're looking at me like, what the heck? And now here we are talking about warm season grasses and prairies and TSI work, and you're the one telling me to get my butt to work. So it's funny how the full circle has come around. But it's
I remember after that 2 weeks of filming during that last of October, first November, I went home. My brother's like, "What's it like? What's Southern Iowa like?" And I'm like, "It's out of this planet. Like,
Jurassic Park.
It is unbelievable. Nothing like it. Never seen anything like it." Yeah. He goes, "How many deer were shooters?" I said, "Shooters for you and I, 130s." Yeah. And he's like, "Yeah." And I said,
"Daily.
Saw 28 of them within bow range." And he's like, "What? Are you kidding me?" And, of course, the very first one I got introduced to was about a 153-and-a-half-year-old that just came walking by, beautiful deer. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, it's definitely a shooter. And Jared was just like, no, that's only 3-and-a-half. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is just
whatever
stupid.
You are smoking must be good.
Yeah.
Wow. So,
anyway, yeah, fun stuff. But
it is a different world.
It is. It is. Iowa, and that experience of filming. I wish everybody would get the experience of hunting Iowa or filming in Iowa, just seeing the landscape. The landscape is awesome. I still remember seeing the huge savannas that were there. So just a great place. And so with that being said, let's backtrack to your upbringing of hunting.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Grew up
in Nebraska. It's crazy because I didn't start deer hunting until I was 26 or 27. So I grew up pheasant hunting and quail hunting behind bird dogs my whole life.
Cool.
I mean, that's what was prevalent, right? Wherever you grow up, whatever the game is what you
turkey hunting for us.
Yeah, sure. For us, it was pheasant and quail. I mean, that's what we did. Family and friends every weekend in the fall. That's what we did. And as we got older and we got to be 16, it became duck hunting because now we could mix and match the seasons and start traveling and moving around. And so we had between two or three cousins, if they weren't available, it was two or three buddies, and we always had every weekend we're going somewhere doing something. And then went to college at Northwest Missouri State in Missouri, and joined a fraternity there and found some fraternity guys that were just as much junkies as I was. And before we know it, you know, we weren't far from it. I can't remember the reserve in the northwest corner by was it
Grand Pass?
Was it by Carroll?
Not away.
Or is it Carrollton or Carroll or?
Carroll, I think, or Carrollton.
Carrollton.
Yeah,
maybe?
That's Grand Pass.
Okay.
Yep. Huge duck hunting place.
Huge.
I mean, like
flyway. It's around the Grand River.
Oh, my gosh. It was waterfowl, like Iowa for me for deer hunting was that place for water. It was like year one, they're like, we got to go. And I'm like, how good is it? And the guy says,
unbelievable.
It's good. I'm like, all right. So we go. It was the very first year I missed Thanksgiving in my entire life.
Jeez.
And my mom did not like that. And that phone rang. She said, excuse me?
Yeah, but I limited out.
And I said, Mom, you have no idea. I have a chance to go do this. She goes, well, you should go, but I just want to let you know that I'm not happy.
Oh, she threw that. I'm disappointed.
I'm disappointed. And then I get the call from Dad, you know, 10 minutes later going, you know, Mom's really disappointed. I said, well, I'm sorry, but I'm going. So it was my first time and stayed with a group of guys, and it was unbelievable.
Jeez.
Crazy.
That
good.
Is
crazy.
When you look at Missouri duck hunting and a lot of our best hunting are the state owned land. Grand Pass is the one that everybody's like, I wanna go to Grand Pass. I've never done it because the waiting list or you take the pill. Yeah. Did they do that back in those days?
It was a chip or something.
Okay. You reach in and grab a chip.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like, oh dang it, bad draw.
Yeah.
Let's go hunt the walk in area.
Yeah. So the fraternity brothers' dad had a relationship somewhere, and then day two or day three, we got access to private ground just off of it.
Oh, bingo.
So it was good
the mother
day
load.
Two,
yeah.
And then it become unbelievable on day three or day four, whatever it was, and it was something that
when it got pressured.
It still resonates in my memory today.
Yeah.
Jeez. Of how good it was. So we used to do those trips quite often because it wasn't that far from the university. So
yeah.
So
the university is in Marshall, right?
Maryville.
Maryville. Okay.
Yeah, far north.
Gotcha.
Far northwest corner.
Yeah. I forget what Mo Valley I think is in Marshall. So
So that's and then you know, stayed doing that whole thing. And then I met my girlfriend at the time, and we were engaged and went to see her brother in northern Minnesota. So I was, I'm going to say 27-ish, 26, 27. I think it was 27. And he was shooting a bow in the backyard. And he goes, "You ever shot one?" I said, "No, I'm a gun guy, right?"
Yeah.
And went back there and I shot it once. And my girlfriend, fiance at the time, ended up being my wife, was standing next to me. I looked at her and she goes, "You got to be kidding me." And I go, "What's wrong?" She goes, "I just see it in your eyes that this is another hobby."
Oh, that's funny.
Because I was
her brother that introduced
yes,
you? So just she can't get mad.
No, she couldn't.
Yeah.
You know? I'm like, hey, this is a relationship thing. Yeah. Just go back in the house.
You want me to bond with
yeah,
your brother?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was kind of hilarious how it all worked out. And so at that moment, it was an itch that – and then I had never – harvested a whitetail before.
Never tried.
I tried twice.
Okay.
Guys from work took me way out west in Nebraska, hunted them, but with no luck, with a gun.
Yep.
Family farms, and came up empty both times. Had a good time. And then he said, "Hey, why don't you come up and hunt with us?" And I had no deer rifle, so I had to start from ground zero, and went up there and I shot. This is crazy. So when you look at the evolution of time, so extra innings G1s were not even the total inches of my first deer. So my first deer maybe totaled 8 to 10.
Yeah.
It was basically, I call it the Wisconsin 11 pointer.
Oh, yeah.
Basically
oh, yeah.
spikes.
Well, that's better than me. The first three deer I ever killed were button bucks.
Button bucks?
And my brother ended up nicknaming me Buttons because of it. And it was like, come on,
dude.
Come on.
Yeah. That's not a monkey you can shake very, yeah. very. Something
dude,
tells me that's still carrying
rule,
it.
Right?
Every once in a while, I still hear Buttons come out.
Oh,
yeah.
I bet. So then I went up there and shot that. And I was just like, man, that was awesome.
Yeah.
And then the
fall. That was with a rifle?
That was with a rifle. And then the next year, they invited me back up and shot some does, didn't have any chance at a buck, and then I started getting into archery at that point. And then from there on, it was – I completely put the shotgun in the gun safe.
Wow.
And I only picked it up for family get-togethers at Thanksgiving and Christmas. And I went all in.
Just hooked.
Bitten.
Wow.
Like nothing bad. I've ever had before. And it became truly an obsession from that day.
Wow.
And I read anything I could read. I traveled to seminars. I did anything I could do to put myself in a position to learn with somebody who had something to say. Buying people's lunch. I actually, probably 15, 16 years ago, were at the Wisconsin Deer and Turkey Expo. Might have been longer than that. Might be 18. And Ralph and Vicky Schiller were there speaking. And I saw him walking down the hallway. And I said, "Hey, Ralph, how are you?" He goes, "How are you, young man?" Shook his hand. I go, where are you off to?" He goes, "I'm buying lunch." He goes, "I'm going to go eat lunch." And I said, "Can I make you a deal?" He said, "You bet." I said, "I buy you lunch, but I want the hour of your time." He said, "Done." And so I went. And
that's a man who knows his priorities.
And got in line, bought him lunch, sat down, and he gave me about 45 minutes of his time. And I just, one question after another.
Mm-hmm.
One question. And he shortened it up really quick. And I'll never forget that saying 16, 17, 18 years ago, which was, "You're only as good as the ground you hunt." You cannot hunt something that is not there.
Yeah, that's right.
And for whatever reason, from that day forward was the day that I became a land steward.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was the day that I was putting deer hunting in front of land.
Uh-huh.
And at that moment when I left, I was missing the boat. I had to find quality land first and the habitat, and the rest will follow.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since that point is when my career changed, and seeing that perspective and understanding that better is when I started harvesting more mature animals.
That's where some of our, when we do our consulting, we sit down with a landowner and it's like, okay, what are your goals? And sometimes they'll say, "I want to grow up, whatever, 180, or I'd like a shot at a Boone and Crockett."
Yeah, we all do.
And it's like, I'm sorry, sir, but we're on 20 acres or 40 acres and the habitat's not great. I don't know if that's ever going to be achieved. We'll do our darndest to get there. It's like try to reel it in to where we have realistic expectations. So, you know, you watch television and you see a lot of really big deer get killed. But if you're hunting Booker County, Missouri, where we're from or where we're at, it ain't happening most
well, but
time.
I think your expectation has to be real. I mean, I didn't get here.
It has to be respective to the land in the area.
Yeah, and
the habitat.
Yeah, so you know, I traveled and I started with a 40. A 40 turned into an 80, an 80 turned into a 160, a 160 turned into a 240, and it took me 20 years to get there. You know, and that, but I learned a lot and putting boots in the ground, making mistakes, observations, and going to seminars and talking to guys like you. And getting around with people with your same passions and stealing ideas from this guy, and before you know it, your plan gets sharper and sharper, and efficiencies go through the roof. And the more you travel as well, going to different states, you truly shorten that learn curve much quicker.
Absolutely.
And I think that was the part that I wish I would have done sooner, was travel more, because I would just stay in the state of Wisconsin for a long time. And when you start going to different states, the exposure and the people, the different terrain, the approaches, then you start coming up with some different ideas and bring it to your own place. And you're like, okay, this can work because you've seen it and it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough to see something sometimes on a page or a conversation and apply it. But when you go see it and experience it, the application becomes much simpler.
It's like a horse with blinders on.
Yeah.
You're only exposed to what you're exposed to.
100%.
And reaching outside to different regions. Like you said, you're just bringing other ideas and adapting those strategies, boom, to right here. Yeah. And a lot of times they can be applicable.
Right.
Just because it's not done in the region doesn't mean it can't be done or shouldn't be done.
I'm not recreating the wheel.
Yeah.
I'm just sharpening the wheel and watching how its wheel's already created. So.
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing. You got to go into this stuff being very open-minded.
Yeah.
You know, put the ego in the back seat. If someone's got something to say, two ears, one mouth, put them in that order and listen, because you're going to come away with something. All these shows I go to, you know, all these people that come up and say hi and introduce themselves and take pictures, I'm just like everybody else, you know? It took me a long time to get to shoot these type of animals, but I was them, you know? And every time someone wants to talk, I always give them the time because I'm still learning from them.
Yeah,
sir. You know, I just heard a story this morning. This is crazy. This will blow your mind. A guy came up to me and said, he goes, I know you got two 200 inches back to back. He goes, what about two 200 inch deer in the same food plot?
Whoa.
And I said, like, what's the year span? He said, same year. And I said, you got to be kidding me. And the two guys were standing there, two different guys, same farm, same plot, 203 and a 208.
Unreal.
Unreal.
Yeah.
So it's just, I mean, these stories like this are just fascinating to me. You know?
A guy gave me advice one time years ago. He said, don't ever get to a point where you think you know everything, because just when you do, a man with gray hair is going to walk up and tell you something, and it's going to blow your mind.
It's going to resonate.
And so that for us, it's like we're not recreating the wheel with our consulting business. All we do is try to replicate the way nature was designed and make it more beneficial to the whole ecosystem.
And spatially put it where it needs to be.
Yeah.
And the right thing to make it then huntable.
That's a very good point.
So it's not recreating the wheel. It's just manipulating in the right way.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So when it comes to childhood, pheasant hunt. Have you been quail or pheasant hunting in years? When was the last time you did that?
3 years ago.
Okay.
3 years ago. And it's always with – we had a standing tradition since I was – so the family tradition was three generations.
Yeah.
And until you become 12, which is in Nebraska, is when you get to carry a shotgun, you are the dog. So it's a pecking order. So you get to come up with the aunts or the uncles and the cousins, but if you're south of 12, you're in the ditches with the orange vests, getting them out of the ditches. And so once you become a gun carrier, the next cousin, you get to point to him and go, you're in the ditch, and I'm out on the back. So towards the end, we had three generations going, and then we lost, I don't know if you saw the special in Critical Mass where my Uncle Jerry passed away.
Okay. Mm.
And he was definitely the backbone behind keeping it running. Mm. And then some of us moved away and jobs, things, and lives changed. But we did it for, it was like 22 years in a row.
Wow. On Thanksgiving Day?
On Thanksgiving, the day after Thanksgiving.
Okay.
We would do it Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And that's awesome. Yeah, it was really cool. In Spalding, Nebraska, we would travel to my dad's, and which was my uncle's hometown, a population 500.
More birds than people.
More birds than people. You got it. And it was more about the family and the relationships and, oh, by the way, we're hunting.
Yeah.
You know, and the memories will be forever burned in my back of my mind that were probably some of my best memories ever in the outdoor lifestyle.
Mm. For us, our Thanksgiving holiday tradition was Thanksgiving afternoon. In between lunch and dinner, we quail hunted. It was always get the bird dog and go out with Grandpa. And we would bird hunt. And at that point, there were still enough quail, but I was so young, couldn't carry a gun until I was 12. Right. So you see a lot of these home videos, and you'll see my brother, my grandpa, and my dad holding the camera, and then it'll pan, and you'll see me over in the bushes or whatever throwing rocks in the creek or running around. And so, yeah, very similar traditions for Thanksgiving. So some of those memories I'll never forget. So
it is. It's the best.
Yeah.
So how did you translate, bow hunting, loving deer, learning land, to getting connected with the Drury Outdoor team? Span that time for us.
There was a gentleman named Brian Thompson, who was a DOD team member at the time. So this is going back 20 years, roughly. And he lived in Madison, Wisconsin. And I lived just on the east side of Madison. And we were at a Madison during Turkey Expo, which is very similar.
What's the big one up in Wisconsin?
That's called Deer Fest.
Deer Fest, that's right.
That's in like August, I believe.
Okay.
Or July. It's in the summertime.
Okay.
And this was always in, it's always the last week in March or first week in April, something like that. And I was walking, and I recognized them from the videos. Mm-hmm. And struck up a conversation, right? Unfortunately, maybe I'm not too shy. Maybe that's a good trade or bad trade. I don't know. But in this case,
you just stick your hand out.
Hey, man, I'm going to find you.
That's it.
And he walked by, and I started talking to him. And before we knew it, we're having lunch. And one thing.
On you.
Yeah, on me. On me.
He's a lunch guy.
Yeah. And we started talking. Before we knew it, I actually just talked to him 2 days ago on the way down here.
Oh,
he called me.
That's cool.
And so we started talking. And it wasn't about me about filming. It was about getting to somebody's brain who, you know, takes it to the next level. Mm-hmm. I always trying to surround myself with somebody who's somewhere where I'm trying to get to. And we just talked and built a relationship. And then I said, you know, that was probably two years later or so. I said, you know, if you ever find a farm in Iowa, I'd love to buy one. And I just kind of said it in passing. And then one night I get a phone call, and it's Mark Drury. And he says, hey, this is Mark. I answered the phone. He goes, this is Mark. And I recognize the voice.
Yeah.
But I couldn't piece it together. And he goes, Mark who? Excuse me. And he goes, Mark Drew. And I go, okay.
I know that name.
I go, what's going on, Mark? And he says, well, I got your name from Brian Thompson. I said, really? I said, why are you calling me? He said, I hear you might be interested in some ground. I said, I am. And he said, well, I may have a farm to sell you. And I said, you're kidding me. And he goes, but we're going to, he goes, the only reason why I'm calling you is because Brian spoke very highly of you. Mm-hmm. And I want to sell it to a guy that I can trust and know and that old type of thing. So he invited me down, let me stay in his house. And we did not go to bed that night. I think I got there about 7 o'clock at night. And we didn't go to bed till about 4:30 a.m. And all
did we just become best friends?
And we just talked about deer and family and life goals. And
that's cool.
I went to bed going, I just had a 8-hour interview, is when I laid my head down. In a very, very methodical and respectful way. He was trying to sort out who his neighbor was going to be.
Sure.
And because that's his livelihood.
Absolutely.
And I respected that. And walked the farm the next day, and, you know, a month later, I bought it. And then Adam came into the mix, and he said, hey, you know what? First year, he goes, why don't you film for me? And I said, nope. I whacked a 162 6/8 with my bow the very first year I had the farm. And if I would have been on the team that year, I'm 99.9% certain, I'm going out on a limb on saying this, but it would have been the biggest deer shot that year.
Oh, wow.
On video, if I was part of the team.
Mm-hmm.
And so then Mark said, you know, we really need to talk. And that's when they started bringing guys like Adam down. Hmm. And throw it in front of me and say, hey, try this.
Yeah. Here's this rookie amateur cameraman. Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah.
And who's so never seen 130 in
he's going to shake every time it comes by bigger than a basket rack.
Yeah. Right. So that's kind of how it really started.
That's
and then
cool.
A trial period for a couple, 3 years, and then basically a proving point. And, you know, through production and doing the right things and ethical things and making sure they want to associate somebody with their brand.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they got to vet that out very well, and rightfully so, and very
and
respectfully
so. They've
obviously
done a good job. That's
they
awesome.
Have. And so one thing led to another, and then they called me one day and said, hey, we want you on full time. And I said, love to. And that was, you know, about, 9 years ago. I'm shooting at the hip here.
Yeah, I was going to say, I filmed you that.
9 years ago.
And you were pretty new with them.
Yeah. Yep.
And then
it was a
shortly
two-year,
after.
It was 2 years. 2 year trial period.
I had, every time I like turn on a show or whatever, and ironically, there you were. And I was like, my gosh, I filmed that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They put me on a trial period for 2 years and then moved me over to the full call, so-called team member status, and been there ever since.
Wow.
Talk about a first-class organization, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it starts at the top with Mark and Terry. I mean, and then obviously Matt and Taylor are very much involved more and more every day. But, you know, they all say the foundation's at the top.
Yeah.
And those guys are just really ground-to-earth, humbled, incredible individuals that do everything the right way.
Yeah.
And
that's good.
It's awesome.
Good to hear.
Yeah, going back.
Well, that's why they're successful, too.
100%.
Yeah,
no
30,
question.
31?
30 years.
30 years.
Yep.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Wow.
30 years.
Time.
It is a long time.
And especially in this industry. I mean, that's unheard of.
I think it is unheard of.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they just got inducted into the Missouri Sports Hall of Fame a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's in Springfield.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's right here.
Yeah. Which is the first
hunting
family or element into the Hall of Fame.
That's really neat.
That's very, yeah. It's what an accomplishment, what a compliment.
No
right?
doubt.
Yeah.
No
and huge for the industry.
Absolutely.
To have a Hall of Fame, to recognize the hunting industry.
A sports Hall of Fame.
Yes.
I've been going there because it's 40 minutes from my hometown. I was there just a couple of years ago. My high school baseball coach got inducted because he's like the winningest high school baseball coach in the history of Missouri. And and there's always been sports guys there. And every once in a while you hear that a former Cardinal or a Royals there. And then all of a sudden I saw this post and it's like, holy cow, they got inducted in the Sports Hall of Fame. Like, that's a big deal.
That's called
somebody's recognizing the hunting industry as equal to other sport organizations. Or
they broke down a lot of barriers that afternoon.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
And you know what? When you look across, who could be a better face to that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the history, the story.
Yeah.
They're just really, really wonderful people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody posted the other day about them and the 30 years of the change, and said, we appreciate you sticking around and sticking through the years of the Coke bottle glasses and the mustaches.
Oh, that's funny.
Like that.
That's funny.
going back to the day.
Guarantee you, if you would have asked them 30 years ago if they're going to give a farm away, to do a token appreciation for 30 years of allowing them to do what they truly passionately love to do as a living for a living,
they
would have laughed at you and said, you're crazy. Yeah. Now here they are.
Not my farm.
Not my farm.
Yeah. So I haven't seen, and I guess the details are out now. What is the giveaway? 60-acre farm.
Are
they handing the deed over? Or are they letting somebody hunt it every year?
Well, I understand it's theirs.
Okay. So they're basically
theirs.
Just
making a drawing.
Name, deed, going
it's
to the
100%.
Title
yep. They're doing all the food plots, hanging the sets, laying it out, doing all that. So when they walk in, it is 100% turnkey, Mark and Terry approved.
Come hunt it.
You know, nailed down to
Putnam County, Missouri, northern Missouri.
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, what a incredible
generous gift.
Yeah.
Gesture.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That speaks volumes.
It does. It truly does.
Mm.
So what also speaks volume is your last 2 years of being a bow hunter. Break that down and kind of catch people up on what the last 2 years have been like for you in the tree stand.
You know, you say that luck strikes you once or lightning, however that says, but I never thought it would strike me twice.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, Major League was fall of 17 who ended up going 203, but he really was a four-year quest. We knew of him back when he was – to put in perspective, the deer was 7.5 when we harvested him. Mm. And Derek, my son at the time, was 14. Derek named him when he was 9.
Oh, that's cool.
So we were sitting in the kitchen table going through pictures, and it came up, and he looked at me. He's a baseball junkie.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at me and said, "Dad, that is a major league deer." And he was young. He was only 3.
Wow.
The deer was 3.
Yeah.
And I looked at him, and he says, "What's so funny?" I go, "That's the deer's name. Major mm-hmm. League." He goes, "All right, let's call him Major League."
Yeah. I'm on board.
So there we go. Major League was born. And that's when he had 3 main beans, and he would have been, you know, plus or minus Boone mm-hmm. as a 3-year-old because of his 3rd main bean.
Mm.
And then we were hunting him that fall, and we had an encounter with him, which I thought he was 4 based on pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an encounter with him at roughly 44, 45 yards with a bow. And I looked at him, and the camera guy's like, "We're gonna harvest this guy. What are we doing here?" And I looked at him. I said, "I can't do it." And he looked at me like, "You've got to be kidding me." And he goes,
"Dedication right there."
And he goes, "Why?" And I go, "He's not 4.
Yeah,
he's 3."
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize that until I saw him on the hoof. And so we let him walk. And then the saga of Major League really started.
And right.
Did you have any encounters with him the following years before you harvested him?
No, we had – the next year we didn't have any – the next 2 years we had no encounters with him. Mm. And then he actually went down when he was 4. He came back up a little bit when he was 5, really blossomed at 6. At 6, he was his sheds were roughly a 180 class deer. But we hunted our tails off on him. We changed the farm around him, but we couldn't figure it out. But what changed the whole method of how we hunted him was the spring of 2016. There's a place at the farm we call the Pretty Woods. And we took the whole family shed hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the number one thing we're going to find. So I said, "We got 3 days of shed hunt. We're going to focus on this side of the farm because I want to find this shed."
Yeah.
And within the first 2 hours, believe it or not, we found a shed.
Wow.
We called the Pretty Woods. Match set. First match set I have ever found.
How close together were they?
50, 60 yards.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I found the first one, and then I mm-hmm. screamed because I knew who he was. And yeah. I got everybody close to me, and we just started circling, right? Because
uh-huh.
it was – the leaves were heavy, and it was a very timber
yeah.
Wood section. And Derek, I think, found the second one.
Mm.
Incredible. Within just a few minutes. And so earmark, right? Mm-hmm. Pretty Woods, here's his shed, boom, make it mark. The next time we come back in, we hunt him that fall. We had one encounter with him but didn't see much of him. Went in the spring of 17, went to the same Pretty Woods, found the same match set within 60 yards of the previous year.
That's ridiculous. That's just unheard of.
And so
Iowa, baby.
Yeah.
So I looked at Casey, yeah. and I said, "He's done."
Mm-hmm.
I go, "What do you mean he's done?" I go, "We're going to get him this year." And I said, "Right there." And we hung a set in July and went in that fall and saw him in the morning of the 6th. And then we saw him on the morning of the 7th, and we adjusted our set 32 yards down the ridge on the afternoon of the 7th, and we killed him the morning of the 9th.
Mm. Oof.
All because of shed hunting. So always...
If he's that predictable year after year, why isn't he going to do it day to day?
Yeah.
Yep. So we hunted him 5 or 6 straight days, and we saw him 4 out of those days.
Mm.
But we never saw him anywhere else, very seldom on the plots. He was coming in at night. I'm talking daylight, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Daylight stuff. And I'm like, his core completely shrunk within, you know, we're going to estimate 60, 80 acres.
Mm.
And he wouldn't come out during very seldom, very
yeah.
seldom. But he was running this ridgeline. And that second set is what finally triggered me and said, this is it.
That's a great reminder, too, of how often do you see a deer that's coming to a food plot and it's all after dark and you're like,
where is he?
Where is mm-hmm. he? How can I'm never going to yeah. be able to kill that deer because he's always moving during dark. That doesn't mean he's not moving during daylight, but it may be closer to the bedding.
That's right.
And you guys just went closer to the bedding yep. and got right in there after him.
Yeah.
How intrusive, you know, do you think you were being by putting a set there like, you know what, this is oh, I'm all in.
We hung it in July.
Yeah.
And we didn't go back in until the morning of the 6th.
Yeah.
And we went in an hour early.
Okay.
Dark. Made sure it was a high-pressure day. The wind was perfect. And we packed food and water. We're like, we're going in, we're coming out of dark. Going in the dark, coming out of dark.
Yep.
And we saw them the very first morning at 10:15. I saw a rack coming from the north, which we anticipated that's where it'd be coming from. And I'm like, Casey, can you get on him? Because I did not have the angle. And it was dead silence. He's like, it's him. And I'm like, who? He goes, it's him.
Hmm. The one.
The one. And at that, I have never been dominated by an animal before until that moment.
Hmm.
And he come walking down the ridge, and I could see him coming. And it was like in slow motion, right? You've chased this animal for 4 years, right? You've put everything, you sweat equity, food plots, all those things you do to get to this moment. And I was so fixated that this is actually him that I couldn't process that I need to get ready to shoot. And so here comes the first window of opportunity. It comes and goes.
Oh, wow.
And then I'm like, oh, my gosh, I'm here.
Wait, this is my moment.
This is my moment. So he completely took my overall being. It's really, really crazy.
Up to that point, what was the biggest deer you'd seen on the hoof in a tree stand?
From that close? I never had a Boone and Crockett.
Yeah.
No.
So it
in the 60s.
With reason, he took
in
your breath 60s, away. Yeah.
In the 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Within bow range.
Yeah.
In the 60s. Yeah. So he completely dominated my inner being.
Yeah.
Controlled my mind, my thinking, everything. And then he went by the first window, and the second window came. Obviously, I got my composure, and that was at 54, 55 yards. Grind on, try to stop him. And, of course, he stops with a tree blocking his vitals.
Naturally.
Yeah. And not that I was going to try to shoot at 54, 55, but and then he walked out. And then we saw him again, sat the rest of the day, did not see him. Saw him again the morning of the 7th at like 8:15 on the same side of the ridge. And did not have an opportunity. He was at 65, 66.
Generally that same trail that you
generally
seen?
The same trail.
Okay.
So I'm going note to self, right? Two days in a row. If we're going to, you know, make a move, we got to make a move. We're going to do things. We're going to push them out or we're going to harvest them. We got to do something. So I looked at Casey at noon on the 7th and I said, we got to move this set 31 yards. I ran a tree. I said, that's the tree. And pull them down at noon on the 7th, walked them over, hung them, climbed back up, sat the rest of the day. Didn't see him the rest of the day on the 7th. I went back in on the 8th, another high pressure north wind. Went back on the 8th. Didn't see much of anything that day. So now I'm thinking we've just officially blew them out. All the does, seeing the scent, us pulling a set down, moving over, the you know, all that stuff. You start being Mr. Negative. Laying in bed, and he goes, what do you want to do? And I said, we don't have a choice. I go, every day we're moving, it's lockdown. So he may be locked down. That's why we didn't see him.
Sure.
Climb back up the morning of the 9th, and sure enough, come due west of us, I see a doe, and she's acting funny. And I said, Casey, get on this doe. I don't know what's coming, but it's different. And he was dogging a doe. And 7:15, the rest is history. Yeah.
Biggest deer up to that point by
40 inches.
Yeah.
Shattering. Yeah.
Shattering that.
Wow. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
But a four-year quest. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, hard work, devotion, time, all everything you named.
That deer put me in a position to take down extra innings. I don't think I would have been able to take down extra innings without being taught what Major League taught me in those in that four-year period. You know, we went through all these pictures, and every single trail picture we ever had of him, he never broke a time.
Huh.
So that told me what?
Not
the dominant. He's not a fighter. His attitude was not there. So we were very reluctant on calling him because I was afraid I might.
Sure.
We actually saw 140 from a distance, 145, actually nudge him off.
Yeah. Interesting. Just a very mild demeanor.
Very mild demeanor. Now you wouldn't have thought that when you saw him.
Yeah.
But his demeanor was. And when we look back at all the trail pictures, not one time was ever broken in that period of time.
Mm. That goes with another podcast we had with a friend of ours talking about who a guy who monitors his deer herd like crazy, and he talks about bully bucks, even though they couldn't be a lot smaller, they're the ones who end up taking over a food plot or taking
it's
over
the attitude.
Area. Mm-hmm. And he said, so you there's choline. We know that choline for genetics, superior
or
genetics, doesn't work in live deer. But we know that, he said, I truly believe choline personalities from the deer herd is a must.
After this, I 100% agree with him.
And so you find the bully buck, and it may not even be the biggest buck.
No. More often than not, they're not.
Right. And you try to get him out of there to where your younger, more superior genetic deer stay within that area. Yeah. You don't get
and
shot.
That's probably why Major League also had it just a very small core area that he was comfortable in. He knew it, he was at.
He didn't want to rumble with anybody. Yeah. I'm fine with who I am. I don't want to wrestle with anybody. Just leave me alone.
Yeah. I'm going to grow up to be 203 inches.
Yeah. Crazy how that
works.
Oh, man.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So at that point, you've harvested Major League, the biggest deer of your career, and it's going, what now? I mean, at some point when you started bow hunting, there was probably a time where you're like, what was the pinnacle for you? Was
I think it's fair to say that every bow hunter, I think we're all guilty, right? What is that? Yeah. What is that magic number?
Mm-hmm.
In any profession, right? Everybody's got that profession they're chasing. That's kind of that magic window.
Yeah.
A goal, right?
Yeah.
And I would say that 200-inch mark is where we all fall into that we're all guilty of, I think.
Yeah.
And Boone is one thing, but that's a huge step.
Yeah.
Not to undermine anything, but then that 200 is kind of like that ultimate level. And I looked at Casey and I said, you know what? We need to slow down and enjoy this because it's probably never going to happen again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Casey was literally, we both almost fell out of the tree.
Wow.
When that happened. I mean, we cried, we hugged. I mean, we were two grown men.
You didn't kiss, did you?
No, we didn't.
What stays in the pretty woods stays.
Yeah. You know, but you get so invested in these things.
Yeah.
When these moments in time happen, one, they're hard to believe, and two, the emotion that come over you, you have no way of controlling it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it was absurd.
Yeah.
I mean, I went from laughing to crying to shaking to literally hanging on to the tree.
Right.
And if you want to see the whole episode, you can go to Drury Outdoors YouTube channel and type in 203 Grand Slam, and it'll see Major League, and I think it's like almost 650,000 or 700,000 views.
Wow.
And it tells you that it's a 18, 19, 20-minute clip. It
just
tells you
raw.
The raw footage start to finish.
I think
that's neat.
One thing I always liked in that DOD atmosphere was the kind of the team mentality to where it wasn't just you, the hunter, but the cameraman's just as invested.
100%.
And it's that way with Mark's camera guy, Terry's camera guy.
100%.
They're all – in it together to where if the hunter kills it, the cameraman gets glory for it too. And
it's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times a deer has been saved because of the camera? Too many to count,
yeah.
Right? So when it all comes together, it's a special moment.
Yeah.
And it takes both people in the tree
both.
To coordinate, to make it happen, to communicate. And
the odds are not in your favor.
They are not.
No,
they're
not.
No.
It's not easy.
It was really the foundation of honing my skills to I don't think I would have been in position mentally to harvest extra innings this past fall without having Major League come through and teach me so much that he did.
So extra innings coming from Major League. Now extra innings comes on the scene. Some point during the summer, you're like
July.
You're like, oh my gosh,
game on. Yeah,
this guy is.
I'm like, I don't believe this. I looked at Casey. You realize we may have a chance of hitting 200 back to back, and he said, "That's crazy. I think it's not going to happen."
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, what's the chance, right?
Sure. Yeah,
it's unrealistic.
In the baseball world, you're a baseball guy.
A huge
perfect
baseball
game.
Guy. Yeah, pretty much.
Like, how often do you see pitchers throwing a perfect game? Not very often.
No.
Maybe a no hitter, since there's 200s getting killed every year. But what are the chances? And so for you guys, you've got another one on your radar.
Yeah. And we saw first picks came in July, and when that happened, our whole season stopped at that point. I looked at him and I said, whatever we need to do, we're going to go and put every camera within a radius of this guy, and we're going to blitz him like we've never blitzed anything, and we're going
to
know anything and everything. We need to know. And so we did. And God is my witness, he was only on one camera.
Jeez.
And he had shrunk. And that's because of the stuff that you guys have taught us and really guided us in the right direction for TSI, the warm season grasses, the native grasses. Mm-hmm. And he had the water. He had all this, the food. You try to stack everything in your favor to not allow deer to go to the neighbor.
Yeah.
You give them every reason to stay. And
yep.
through the education and the guidance that you guys have given us for the past few years, it's a huge part. You know, I said he was 27 inches score or 27 total inches or 27 points, but 26 were actually scoreable. In an interview that I did after harvest, I said I can name at least 26 people, 27 people that helped me achieve this goal. Because there's no way I would have done it by myself. Because there's so many variables that go into it.
Were we like a G2 or G3?
You can go whatever. You can be main beam. Yeah. I don't care. You know? Because it's a huge part of the whole thing.
Nub on the back. Nobody notices. That's where you were.
Yeah. Exactly.
That was the drop time that got broke off. Yeah. Just left.
Did he have any points broken off?
No.
None.
None.
Wow.
Mm. So here's another interesting point of this deer, which is, you know, we've been doing trail picks for, 15, 16, 20 years. I got to go back in time. CMC. Yeah, 20 years. 21 years I've been doing trail pictures. God, I can't realize I'm that old. 21 years. So 20 years. So that is the most buck, regardless of age,
mm-hmm.
photographic animal I've ever had.
And in one single camera,
though. On one single camera. We had more daylight pictures of him when I compare other bucks
mm-hmm.
than any other deer I've ever tracked.
And he's the biggest.
So it testaments, I think, to the habitat,
right?
To the food, to the water, to the cover, to the bedding, mm-hmm. all of it, right?
Yeah.
Of allow him
concentrating the resources for them to use, and that's going to concentrate their movements, and you saw that.
They don't have to go to another block of timber, another area to get what they
need.
Not saying they won't.
But I need to give them every reason not to.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And that goes back to when I flipped the switch, 16, 17, 18 years ago, when I realized I need to care more about the land mm-hmm. than I do the deer, I think this is another prime example of it.
Yeah.
Coming
full circle. We were taking care of the land, and that ended up taking care of the deer.
Mm. I've heard this statement where people say, I'd rather hunt a deer that has a big area because I know he's moving
a lot. Mm.
I would rather have deer that have small areas that
100%.
Move a little bit.
100%.
And because, he's a great example, and you see bucks that have these small core areas where we know that they have everything they need right there. So they don't have to risk going to another food plot to bump into a more dominant deer that's going to whoop him, gouge an eye out.
Right.
You just put them in a nice little hidden spot and know that they're there. So most photogenic, biggest deer.
Yeah.
Daylight.
Yeah.
And
that goes for daylight and night pictures. We had more pictures of him. And I'm talking 1-year-old, 2-year-old. I don't care what buck you have in our library of photos. He was the most photogenic buck I've ever had.
Wow.
He was comfortable.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And why I was comfortable is because the habitat was where he wanted
to
be.
I guess for the habitat standpoint for us, talked about your farm. You bought it. I forget what year you bought it, but it was old cattle ground.
Yeah, 9 to 2010, 2011.
So there's just been a restoration to where you remove it from old cattle ground back to more of a prairie setting where you have all the native grasses and the native forbs to where you've got a lot more cover. You got a lot more food during the summer months. You've got a lot more just healthy habitat to where a deer can survive on that alone. But the food plots help. They're more the ice cream type where they're going to come there for that little bit different variety in the diet. What was the scenario? What was the food plots?
We had brassicas and clovers in front of us. Then we had a bottleneck. We'll call it an hourglass effect. And then we had a bottleneck that was 31 yards from our setup, and then that opened up to a bean field to the west of us that was 3 or 4 acres.
Mm. So I love the bottleneck setting where you've got one on one side and the other on, and you've got some way to funnel them by you.
Yep. So that took years to do, right?
That
just didn't happen. So people said, how lucky are you? And I'm like, well, that luck started 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Because I had this conversation just this morning down in the booth at the Quest Hunt booth. A guy came up because X-Ray News Rack is down there, and he's like, "Hey, can I do the whole thing, the picture?" "Sure, sure, sure." And he goes, "Give me your top five things how you killed him." And I was like, "Fair question, but I can't answer that because it's 20 years of things that I've learned and adjusted that put me in that moment in time that I don't think I would have been here if I didn't go through that mm-hmm. learn curve."
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, that maybe sound a little. I don't know how else to answer the question.
Right.
But I'm being honest.
It's not a simple answer.
It's not a simple answer.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, the control burns, how we, you know, divide the farm up and do control burns and focus on one set and then go the next year.
And I think you guys had done a burn in that area where extra innings was.
We did. So yes.
Very,
the spring of 18. We did. And that's where we found the sheds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And to me, you know, when you walked us through that kind of setup, it's like it all makes sense. You spent the most amount of time in that part of the farm trying to restore and help some and make the habitat better. That's where he wanted to live, and that's where you ended up taking him.
I don't think it's by chance.
Yeah.
Right. At that point, he's already chosen that area for specific reasons, and then you're just enhancing and making it that much better so he doesn't take out these journeys and he's just consistent.
Exactly.
And once he was consistent, what was the hunting strategy at that point? You're like,
The hardest part was when the season started. We're like, we're going to wait for a north or northwest wind. That's it. Mm-hmm. High pressure day and cold. And I said, we're going to wait till late October, early November to increase the possibility of him being on his feet, obviously. Mm-hmm.
Did he ever stop moving during daylight during the warm part of the Indian summer, basically?
Yeah,
October lull?
100%. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But, I mean, there was still, when we collected cameras, he was always the most photogenic deer. Mm-hmm. Out of when you all racked him, stacked him, he was the one always standing alone when we went through him.
Mm.
It was just odd.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm like, this guy's really, really.
He's a standout.
Yeah. He's really. Our chances are good.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the first north winds are coming. We're getting like the 20, 25th of October. And Kay's like, you know where we should be. And I said, the pressure's not high enough. I don't want to go. And Derek. Missouri youth season, mm-hmm. our father-son annual trip that we've been doing since he was 9, now he's 15. I'm not going to break this tradition. Yeah. Here we go, down to Missouri. And guess what's the first high-pressure north wind opening day
of father's love.
Opening day of Missouri youth season. And I look at Casey, and Casey looks at me and goes, you know where we should be? And I said, I know. And I said, there's no way I'm walking in there and telling Derek we're not going youth season. No way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, extra inning gets a pass, right? And I was thinking, I hope we don't regret this. But it wasn't about the deer. It was about me spending time with Derek.
Yeah.
Because my window of time with him is very short.
Yeah.
A deer is not more important than spending time with him.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, the day come and gone, and we had to wait until October 30th for the next one. And we were watching the weather, and it was high pressure. It was very overcast day, and the wind was perfect. And I said, Casey, we're going in 2 hours early. And I said, when we leave the truck, mum's the word, we're walking like we're on ice, and we don't try to minimize anything we can. Because my fear was we knew he was bedded so close because so many daylight pictures we had of him.
Right?
He couldn't been traveling that far.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't know where he's at. But he is close.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to really be smart about this.
Yeah.
And we were. And at 3:15-ish, we saw him.
Oh, gosh.
And he was dogging a doe, actually.
Yeah. Wow.
And he came by us.
Where's this footage at? Where can a listener go and watch this?
You can actually go on DeerCast, which is the new app that Deer Outdoors released this fall.
Yep.
And you can go under the DeerCast Now section. And go under date, which would be October 30th, and you can pull it up, and they'll show a little pre-roll to show the hit. So you'll see, I don't know, a minute and a half, roughly, of footage of him.
Okay.
But you're welcome to do that because it's amazing footage.
Yeah.
So we saw him at roughly 3:15, and dogging a doe, and he went due north into the timber. And I looked at Casey at that point, and I said, we're going to have a chance at this because Major League did that 2 years prior, went in a timber thicket with a doe, and he came out, but he came out quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very, I think the footage was never aired because it was like the time we hit the record button, it takes 2 or 3 seconds for the camera to come on. He gets through. It's a quick flash and then back out. And I'm like, he's going to do the same thing Major League did. She's going to come out to eat. So we just got to wait. And
she's going to lead him right here.
Yep. And sure enough, every doe that came out, I was like, okay, is it her? Is it her? Mm-hmm. Wait, what's behind? Wait behind. Finally, on the 6th or 7th or 8th doe, whatever it was, doe come out and she looked behind. I go, it's got to be her. And he came through a warm season grasses section. And I've never seen this before, doing this a long time. And when he parted the warm season grasses, I said it was like Noah's Ark parting the Red Sea because he came out of it. And Casey was lucky enough to get this all in film because the way she was acting, I said, go ahead and film her.
Yeah.
And he came out and it just parted.
Oh, wow.
And there was three other bucks on the field at the time, some 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds. And when he hit the field, they actually moved backwards. It was a dominance within wildlife that I've never seen before.
Huh. It's like, oh, he's here.
He's here. And they all just kind of gave him his space.
Yeah.
You know? And he stands really proud and sticks his head up. I mean, he shows how big he is, you know? And everybody just kind of let him have his space.
Mellows out. That's incredible.
And then it seemed like forever because he's at, I'm going to call it, 75, 85 yards, plus or minus, and inside of 100 for sure. And I was like, I got to watch the doe and him because that's the key.
Mm-hmm.
And we had 3 or 4 scrapes, I think 4 scrapes on that field, and one which was a mock scrape. And he went over to one of them and he started scraping that lasted less than 40 seconds. I think it was 38, 39 on the clock. And he was quartering away at 48 yards, and Casey's like, now's your time, now's your time. And I'm like, I got to think. I'm thinking. And as I'm thinking, I'm watching him quartering away, 48. Do I take the shot? I'm looking, I'm watching her. And as he's starting to slow down scraping, she starts moving. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to bet on the come. And she starts walking right in front of us and going through the bottleneck, which is 31 yards away. And I'm like, I'm going to take this bet, and I'm going to gamble. And he stopped scraping, and he stopped, and he looked. 2.5, 3 seconds, didn't find her. Off he goes, and she's around the corner, so he cannot see her. Mm-hmm. Just around the corner.
Yeah.
And he starts running to go get her. He makes the turn. She is still there. He puts the brakes on, and 31 yards.
It happens to be broadside at 31 yards.
Yeah. Quartering away. At 31, yeah. So the blind set up that way, though, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. By design.
By design. That's correct.
That's exactly how it's meant.
That's where you go into food plot and property architecture.
No question. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So everything was by design, and it actually worked to – I mean, if you – Tom Brady, you know, laid out a plan, that's how he would have laid it out.
Yeah.
And that's
how – That's where habitat enhancement and property architecture married together – is a deadly combination.
It's as magical as it can possibly be.
Mm. Yeah.
And then obviously the rest is history.
I would say there's always exceptions to everything, but 9 times out of 10, under most circumstances, they're going to do that.
Mm.
And you capitalized on it.
Yeah.
So
239, right?
239, yeah.
What were his sheds last year?
Plus or minus 180.
Big jump.
Yeah.
Big jump.
Did you know he was that big?
No.
Even on all those pictures?
No. Me and Casey ran the tape all the time.
Yeah.
And fun, right? Because you get different angles. Oh, what do you think of that point now? Because they're always exposing themselves. I mean, he's got 40 points of extras and 40 inches of mass. You know, the main beams are just short of 27 inches or 26 and change, but they didn't quite hit 27. So,
unreal.
Yeah. So,
what was the spread?
Oh, man. I've been asked this question a million times. And I get Major League and extra innings. We'll have to go tape him. I'm embarrassed to tell you I can't remember.
He's big.
It's
enough.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
So, anyway, we were, to your point, we had him at 212 to 218 is what we thought we were going to. 215, we just kind of settled it'll be. Yeah. He'll be bigger in Major League.
Right.
You know. And then we laid him on the ground, and then we picked him up, and I was really quite quiet because every time I turned him, I saw stuff something I didn't see in pictures.
Oh, wow.
And then we met up with Mark. I sent a text to Mark, to my wife, Derek, and Mark at the same time. And this is a wonderful story. Mark sends me a text on the way to the set that day, and he says, "Hey, man, we're a bunch of us are together. Terry's in camp. We'd love to have you join us for dinner if you can. We're going to Mexican." And I said that I responded. I said that would be my plan B. And he said, "What's your plan A?" And I said, "I'm taking down extra innings." He goes, "I love your plan A. Good luck." And so I texted him and I said something like, "Plan A
executed!"
Exclamation point. And you know, the phones blew up. And he goes, "Get your butt to Mexican ASAP. We everybody's waiting." So the story's even sweeter, right? So he's in the truck, and we walk up the table, and there's really at least a dozen people. It's Mark, Terry, Taylor, all the camera guys are there.
Yeah.
Wade, Will, their wives and girlfriends, and I can't. I'm probably forgetting somebody because I apologize, but there are so many people, and they had just gotten their drinks, and everybody gets up and from the table and walks out the restaurant. The owner's like, "What the heck just happened?"
Bad he's, service.
He's like, whoa. And I said, "No, we'll be back. We got something to do."
Yeah.
So we go back to the truck and obviously throw down the tailgate of the Ram, and they're like, "Oh, my gosh." And then so somebody said, "Let's do some guesses." And this is the part that got really interesting, which was Mark and Terry were 215, 220. Everybody was around that 210 to 220.
Yeah.
And then Will, Wade's brother, said 230. And now we didn't tape him at this point. And Will said 230, and everybody looked at him like he was like, absolutely crazy. There is, I mean, everybody was laughing at him.
Yeah.
You know, and then come to find out, he's the closest one of the bunch.
Nine more inches,
and he fell short, but he was 239. So it was funny how it all went down.
Did you have to remeasure it after? Like, are we sure that's right?
Well, you know, I credit Mark and Terry for this. I know this goes back to years and having a lot of wisdom. Was they said, "We don't want you to be a part of the scoring. Let somebody else score it." And so we went off and had a conversation, and we were talking about it, and you know, just talking about the day and the events. And Casey was there, and Wade was there, and Kyle was there, and I can't remember Will. I think there was four or five people helping, taping, writing, you know, being involved in the process. And I was close enough that when they got to the total, someone said, "You better add that up again." And then they said, "Are you sure? Let's do that one more time." And I thought, how big is this thing?
Yeah.
And then they showed me, and you can see the clip on. You can actually go on DeerCast and see the clip, and they'll air it on Critical Mass. But I believe they did a segment of when live, actual, the real time, they showed me the score, and they typed it on their phone, and then showed me on their phone the number, and I was blown away, absolutely blown away. And then Mark, which I did not know this at the time, it didn't process for me. He was going through Mark and Terry were talking, and we were talking about the score, and then Mark goes, "You know, Greg, do you realize that you just harvested the largest whitetail in DOD history of over 30 years gunner bow?" And he goes, "This is of, you know, epic proportions."
Yeah.
And when he said that, that's when I was like, I was really humbled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's been a lot of incredible people part of the DLD team throughout the years that are flat out killers, man.
Mm-hmm.
Big buck slammers.
Yeah.
And to be part of that echelon of conversation, I didn't felt very worthy to be part of that conversation.
Well, and it broke it, but it kind of shattered it a little bit, didn't it?
Yeah, Goliath was 235 or something, 234, something like that.
Unreal.
Yeah.
No matter what,
a great thing
deer.
For me, years of holding the camera, it's incredible footage.
Oh, Casey.
Not anything negative towards the other giant deer that were killed on film, but the footage you could tell where it's like, let's just get this deer killed, and the footage was number two. Casey killed it with
killed
the footage.
It. Nailed it.
It's some of the best footage you'll see of any deer, but let alone the largest one in DOD history.
We actually had a really good time that night with a group of people. And it was a long evening, I'll put it that way. And so we were back at Mark's place, and they said, put the footage in. So I'm going to summarize what you were just saying.
Yeah.
And so we're all sitting in Mark's living room. We put the footage up. And I don't know who asked the question. Somebody asked, "Hey, Terry, how does this stack up?" And he paused sitting there, and he said, "On a scale of 1 to 10, this is a 20. He goes, "There is nothing you could have done better or have a bigger deer on the way this thing was laid out."
Yep.
And when he said that, and then he looked at me, and I thanked him because it meant a lot. He said, "Greg, thank you for making the shot, because most guys wouldn't have."
Yeah. And I mean, from a guy who's set in camp with Terry and Mark judging, I'll say that they're, for good reason, DOD is successful because they hold the caliber
so high.
There's been times where I shot stuff I thought was pretty good, and they would be like, no, you need to do this, you need to do this. And be like, man, I thought I killed it.
I know.
So for them to say something like that, that just speaks volumes.
It very humbled me. You know, it was a moment to myself in that living room where I'm like, wow, that was one of the most ultimate compliments a guy could ever receive.
It's
from a small group of people. And then he said, thanks for making the shot, Greg, because most guys wouldn't have.
Yeah.
And, you know, that says a lot coming from a guy like that.
Yeah. Sure does.
You know? So. Wow.
I know we pretty well went over an hour, but man, what a great time just to sit down and catch up and tell stories. I learned stuff about your upbringing I didn't know, and I've known you for 9 years.
Yeah.
Like, when it comes to the pheasant and quail and hearing the full story of Major League and extra innings. And
I do have one question. I know you get it asked a lot.
Yeah.
But, and you're an extremely humble guy. Obviously, people are, you know, saying, oh, can it be 3 years, this and that in a row? Removing that from the equation.
Yeah.
But honestly.
Yeah.
Looking forward into the future. We're not talking deer inches, this and that. We're talking just overall where you want to see the property go and your thoughts with the property itself from a land manager standpoint. What are you most excited for in the future when it comes to all this?
Well, you know, you guys have taught me a lot. I mean, and, you know, my background is my dad was a farmer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was basically, you know, grown up that you should leave the land better than what you owned it as, and turn it the best you can and leave it to somebody else, because we are the stewards only for a period of time. You may hold the deed and be the only property, but you are that for a period of time.
Sure.
And, you know, you should never do things to jeopardize the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what really excites me about this particular farm, that, you know, lucky enough to be in a position to have it, and to have guys like you consulting with us and tweaking it all the time and making it better. Yeah, do I want to chase big deer? Sure, that's why I do
right.
it. But,
right.
you know, it's really the love of the land. You know, it's truly, as your slogan is, land and legacy. I mean, I thought what you guys came up with was absolutely dead solid perfect, because that's how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what will be my, you know, Nicole and Derek's farm when I'm done? I don't know, but it's irrelevant, because it will be somebody else's child or daughter or son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I want them to walk and go, you know what, this guy who really took care of this, really, you could see his passion and love for it. So,
you know, when you called me the next day, I think, after you harvested extra innings, and you, of course, knowing the projects you guys have going on where you're restoring and trying to eliminate the cool season grasses, going back to more natives, and knowing the benefits to the whole native species. You guys are in an area with some pheasants, some quail, and I ask you, after we talked about the deer, I said, tell me about the pheasants.
Yeah.
Are you seeing? You're like, oh, my gosh, more pheasants than I've ever seen on this place.
Yeah. So 4 or 5 years ago, it was an anomaly to see one, let alone hear one.
Wow.
And then with all the stuff we've done in the past 3 years, this past fall, I heard and seen more pheasants that fall than I had in all the years combined.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. New Thanksgiving tradition.
Well, unfortunately, they're at the same time. And unfortunately, I think there's a conflict of interest of walking through these fields with a shotgun, unloading them when you're going to go deer hunt the next week.
Yeah.
So I'm not so sure that plan
maybe
is going to go
farm.
Well. Yeah, maybe on another farm. So I'm not sure.
But at least they're happy and flourishing there now, once again.
Well, but I think it's a true testament to your guys' leadership and your guidance of what you're doing and how you're showing others of how this truly works. I mean, you truly have the big scope in mind. And I think if you're open enough person to invite you guys on the property to put the boots on the ground and do an assessment, you better be open enough to have feedback. Because I'll be honest with you, some of the suggestions you had were very hard for me to go, do we really want to do this? Because I know how good this farm is now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You can't glue trees on when you cut them.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I won't get them back in my lifetime.
Yep.
So that's very difficult to go, I'm going to go down this path and trust you.
Yeah.
Because you can't go back.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And I'm here to say that you guys were right.
Well, we appreciate that. Yeah. I just
big compliment.
when people ask me what some of my favorite areas to work, like we get asked this all the time. Oh, yeah. You probably get asked deer questions. We get asked, what's your favorite state? What's your favorite region? Yeah. And we always go back to some that are the closest to naturally occurring as far as pre-settlement. In your place, in that region of southern Iowa, the oak savannas and prairie.
Mm. Taking deer out of the equation just from a habitat standpoint, gorgeous.
It's a beautiful. Yeah. But you know what? We travel Kansas. We travel Illinois. Yeah. We go, Missouri. And I love traveling new places because, one, of education and learn. Mm-hmm. But, two, they're all beauty in their own way.
That's right.
And they're so cool and different. But until you get out there and experience them and see the sunsets and sunrises and see how the deer move and why they're doing it, it really makes you so much more of a woodsman and a land steward that it's hard to put in words until you go out and do it.
That's right.
Absolutely right.
Well, I know we got to run to lunch.
Yep.
Can't thank you enough for coming on. Long time coming.
Yep.
And hopefully everybody's going to enjoy it. We're talking big deer and habitat and somebody in Iowa. So thank you so much for coming on. And how can they find you? You're on Instagram.
Yeah, on Instagram, G. Glessinger at Drury Outdoors. And, I think with the DeerCast app, Drury Outdoors DeerCast, is if you want to follow anything Drury Outdoors, DOD, it is 100%.
And you can find it there.
You can find it there, and you can follow whoever you want to follow. Facebook, they obviously give us a shout-out and keep us informed and so forth. But that DeerCast is going to be truly the foundation moving forward, and some of the stuff they have going, I'm going to call it version 2, 2.0, coming out sometime this year between now and, I would suspect, September 1st, before the season starts. They're really, really going to take it to the next level. So, strap it in, guys, because this stuff that they're doing is just flat out unbelievably cool. Okay. And they're doing it for everybody involved, right? Anybody who's involved in hunting with the new Facebook share or fan share that they're doing now, anybody can go on and share their posts on the DeerCast app. Right. They're trying to get more people involved, more interaction, there more content. I think they're blowing out one, if not three, articles a day on who knows what to do. That's with habitat, crazy. To traditions, to anything, just to educate. And the more we can do that, the better off we're going to be. And it's a really, really a cool platform that they're really going to take to the next level and continue to do. So fantastic. I would start there and then go to Instagram. Just about every team member is on Instagram. So
there you have it, guys.
Thank you, guys. Honestly, I appreciate the relationship more than you know. Landon Legacy is taking off. I mean, I remember it wasn't long ago where you called me and said, hey, I got a crazy idea. I'm going to go on my own. I said, more power to you. And here we are. How many years later?
Two years
later, and you guys are absolutely killing it from going all over the country, predominantly Midwest, and now some of the East.
Yep.
And, I mean, you guys are just I appreciate what you do, and I appreciate our friendship, and not only friendship, but on the professional level as well, because I think you're a huge part. You're definitely a part of what I achieved, and from the deep of my heart, I say thank you.
Oh, thank you for saying that. That's awesome. Feeling's very mutual.
I really do.
All right, guys. Well, there you have it, and we'll catch you next week.
We'll see
you.